paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
It was an eventful week in technology, for me anyway.
Oh, really? How so?
I had another drone crash.
Oh, my gosh.
And I also installed Chromecast at home.
Uh-huh.
So then I could start playing YouTube or Netflix onto my TV just by casting the stream to my TV.
Oh, that's pretty neat.
So I'll feature this
Chromecast.
Curious
to hear about
that. That was kind of a lot of fun. I enjoyed doing that. And, there's also lots going on in technology. People are, it's all politics these days.
Yeah.
And, but things are moving forward. And I did have quite a bit of enjoyment on technology this week, which I'll share with you later in the week. I'm going to also feature today the chief operating officer of Facebook, Sheryl Sandberg. She is the first tech woman to be worth more than $1 billion. So, you know what? She was born in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I would feature her as one of the women in technology.
Cool.
Of course, it was a huge mailbag.
There's a letter in mailbox.
We got an email from Margaret. Dear Doc Shirts. Doc Shirts, okay. Periodically, I restart my iMac because the performance speed begins to degrade if I place it into sleep for too long without restarting. Invariably, when it starts up again, I've lost applications. Like I had Weatherbug icon on my top right ledge, and it gave me the temperature. Now it's gone. I had the Tor browser. Of course, the Tor browser is for surfing anonymously.
Uh-huh.
What's going on, Margaret? What are you using for the Tor browser? What is that all about? She had that in my dock. She said it's in my dock, and now it's gone. How do I prevent this from happening going forward? Thanks for your help, Margaret. Well, actually, disappearing apps is kind of a recurring theme on all the Apple blogs. They talk about it a lot. And I think there are multiple reasons. Now, there was one whole stream. They were blaming, lost apps on the antivirus program. One particular person, they felt that Norton Antivirus would periodically find an app that it thought was a virus, and it would put it, and it would quarantine the app and put it in the quarantine folder. So that particular Mac user you can search for then the hidden folders. There's a program called Easy Find, and you enable invisible files. You can search around and look for the quarantine folder to see whether in fact your antivirus program has quarantined any of your apps. Now another user had apps on the launch bar. The launch bar. Now, the launch bar lets you press a keyboard shortcut and then type some letters to choose an app and then press return to launch it. But sometimes he would type in the letters, and there's actually a choice delete. And he was just go so fast, he'd hit delete instead of return. And so then he would move the app to the trash. So he was like in his speed, sometimes apps would disappear from the launch bar because he actually deleted them. So he'd look for the trash. Now, if the applications like your Tor disappeared from your dock, the good news is anything on your dock is only an alias or a shortcut to the real application. So the application is still installed in the applications folder. You just have to create another shortcut. So those are three suggestions that I found on the Mac, blogs. And so I think you could try any one of those and see what happens. We got an email from Arnie. Hi, Doc Shirts. You probably don't get as many robocalls as others do, but I get my share. Have you ever heard a program called NoRobo.com? Now, this company appears fairly new and recently won a contest with the Federal Trade Commission. It's a free service. On the other hand, there is this Digitone call blocker, which is at digitone.com, which costs about $100. Have you ever heard of these programs to eliminate robocalls? Which one do you recommend? Also, would they work with UMA, or does UMA eliminate calls, you know, robocalls altogether? Your show is the greatest. Thanks, Arnie, from Davisonville, Maryland. Well, let's talk about no robo first.
We're talking about a landline here, right?
No.
It
will even work for UMA.
Oh, okay.
You're jumping ahead of me, Jim.
I'm sorry. I'm backing off.
It could be a landline, but they also do voice over IP. So no robo. No robo. It's the brainchild of Aaron Foss. Now, he's a software programmer from Long Island, and he got fed up, just fed up with robocalls. So he decided to create something that would fix it. It's a cloud-based solution that he offers for free. Just did it as kind of, you know, just his gift to the technical world, because it was a personal thing that he hated. Now what happens, it takes advantage of what's called the simultaneous ring service provided by some phone carriers. So what happens is the phone rings at your house, and it simultaneously rings the service in the cloud at norobo.com. And then No Robo looks it up in their table of robocall violators. And if it's a robocall, it hangs up on the phone, so you only hear one ring, and then it hangs up. And it actually works really well. And they actually have in their database 1.2 million phone numbers. They're blacklisted. And so, and that they know legitimate robocalls come from schools or doctors, and those are not blocked. Now, this service has gotten absolutely great reviews, and the FTC officials are using it. They say,
wow,
this is actually a great technical solution. Now, you look it up, it works for most of the major carriers. They have to support this simultaneous ring feature. It even works for UMA, which I've got. So I'm thinking No Robo looks pretty good. Now let's look at Digitone Cell Blocker. That's not a cloud-based service. That's a little box that you buy, and you put it in your house, and it hangs up on the callers automatically. If it's in a list, you've got a memory. You can put in 140 numbers that you want to block, and it also will block. It will also block anything which is out of area, spoofed, unavailable, private, anonymous, name not provided, or unknown kind of calls. And so you can block that. You also can have what they call the VIP list, which will not block the people except after hours.
Oh.
So, like, you know, your boss, okay, you know, you want to take your phone call from your boss, but you don't want to take it at 3 a.m.
No.
So you put him on the VIP list, and then you simply press the after hours button, and his call will not come through at 3 a.m.
Oh, gee, my phone was off.
Yeah, and so, you know, so that's a way if you got a boss that bothers you too much. But then as soon as you wake up, you can take it off, and then you can take the phone call. Now, I discovered that, this service is this Digiphone phone blocker. The little box costs $99. I mean, it got lukewarm response. I wouldn't get this thing. I would go with this norobo.com. That is a great service, and the guy is really trying to make a difference. And they've got a dynamically updated blacklist. So it's not like you have to provide all these lists.
They already know.
So that looks like a fantastic service. Now, I did check. They support UMA. Then they support Verizon. There's a whole list of carriers. Just go to norobo.com to see if your carrier's on.
No Mo, Robert. No Mo.
No robo calls. What is it?
No. It's No Mo Robo.
No, let me see. It is No More Robo. Oh yeah, No Mo Robo. NOMO Robo. Yeah, No Mo Robo.
It's, you know, it's tough when we make these words out of.
Yeah, so it's NOMORobo. No Mo Robo.
There's so many O's in there. It's
very complicated.
It's very complicated.
Now I have to tell you. I have to tell you that what I use is UMA, and Arnie. What I use is UMA, and of course that's voice over IP. I bought this voice over IP box for $225. I transferred my landline to it, and I pay $10 a year, and then I have to do the taxes. So it works out about $20 a year, including taxes, for my landline, and that includes unlimited calling around the entire continental U.S. for $20 a year.
Wow!
And then I added about $30 for foreign calls, and I can call all the international countries at Skype rate. So we can call India, say, at 2.5 cents a minute. China, well, India's about 6 cents a minute. China's 2.5 cents a minute.
Wow!
And so you just and I've got this hooked up to my home number. So you just I can make calls with my home phone anywhere in the U.S. or anywhere in the world using Ooma, and it's perfect. And I simply transferred my landline to it. So I love Ooma. Then what? Ooma also has a blacklist. So you log onto the website. I activated the blacklist. I also block any caller IDs, any anonymous, any of that stuff. And since I've had Ooma, I get no calls. Wow. I just get no sales calls. And if there's a persistent call that comes through because they are putting in some sort of caller ID and it's not on the blacklist yet, I can manually add it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a web interface. So I actually love Ooma. But now that I know that NoMo Robo supports Ooma, I may add on top of my Ooma blacklist NoMo Robo. So there you go.
You know, it's funny, and may I have a sidebar?
Yes.
And, you know, I may be completely wrong about this, but we've talked about this in the past, how you could not block phone numbers on a cell phone, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other day, I stumbled across something on my iPhone. Maybe it's part of the new software update, but now you can.
Oh, that's a very good feature.
I was able to block something off the phone.
Now, see, I'll bet you this NoMo Robo would look them up, see if they support Verizon Wireless.
Okay.
Then you could use them for your cell phone blocking.
I'm going over to the computer lab for a minute.
Yeah, go over to the computer lab.
While you continue on.
I'm
going
to continue on. We got an email from Ken. Dear Tech Talk, you might have answered this before, but could you explain why you post your archives of the show in .ashx format? When actually, if you rename the file .mp3, they'll play in any MP3 player. There must be some advantage to do this. Thanks, Ken in Maryland. Well, the ASHX files are part of the ASP.NET programming language it's a Microsoft programming language. And they can be opened with any programs that supports ASP directly. Now, the ASHX files are not intended to be viewed or opened by the browser. Actually, those are basically designed for a structure where you are going, where your website's going to replace a particular line with another line as it dynamically creates the web content. And so we basically have website generated content that we deliver to you. Now we provide a content management system called Sitecore, and Sitecore uses .NET technology. So they basically within the .NET framework they renamed all of our files ASHX, but they deliver MP3s. And so what happens if you actually get that particular line, you are right, you can simply replace the ASHX with MP3 and you'll play it. We also designed our site so all the links were backward compatible with prior links before we moved out. So it's kind of a technical issue. And we had to go with this because we went with this particular Sitecore CMS. But that was a good question, and not many people have noticed that particular feature of our website.
Back to NoMo Robo for a second.
Yeah.
Yes, about Verizon. It supports like a dozen different cellular carriers, including crazy stuff like Walmart, Family Mobile, and they have a place where you can insert other. So you could probably.
So in fact, that did they do Verizon Wireless?
Uh huh. Yep.
So that means that you could block robocalls to your cell phone using this NoMo Robo.
That's amazing.
I'm telling you, that was actually a great discovery. I did not know about it, and thanks, Arnie. Arnie always gives us good information.
He does,
for Tech
absolutely.
Talk. Yeah, so I think I may even add that to my Ooma. I'll add it to my Verizon Wireless, and we'll report back if I have any problems with it. But I don't think I will. Okay, we've got an email from June. Dear Dr. Schertz, Kindle or Nook, which is better? Although I love opening up a real book, there are times when an e-book would be great. Can you advise? Thanks for your help. June in Fairfax. Well, June, it really all depends on what ecosystem you want to join. Kindle is Amazon. And you'd buy all of your e-books through Amazon. Amazon's an up-and-coming company. Nook is a Barnes & Noble product, a struggling company, which may not be around in 5 years.
There you go.
So do you want to be tied to the Barnes & Noble ecosystem for buying your e-books or to the Amazon ecosystem? I think Amazon pricing is pretty good. So I would actually, if you're going to choose between Barnes & Noble and Amazon, I'd go with Amazon for my e-book ecosystem, and that means you're going to go with a Kindle. Now, actually, I use iBooks, which is on the iPad or the iPhone. So I'm tied to the Apple ecosystem, so I get all my ebooks through Apple. But actually, Amazon sells them cheaper than Apple.
Huh.
So if you really just look at, but I like Apple because it's all integrated. Now, the other nice thing about Kindle, if you get a Kindle, you can download the Kindle application to your iPhone, and you can read Kindle books on your iPhone.
Cool.
Or you can download the Kindle application to your computer, and the Kindle application and the Kindle itself, they all synchronize with each other through the cloud. So look at the books that are available through Amazon, and would you like to buy everything through Amazon? And if you would, then I'd get a Kindle.
Good.
We got an email from Led by Brain. Dear Doc Shirts, I needed to get Skype onto my iMac and installed it today. I assume that when somebody calls my Vonage number and that calls me now, both my Vonage phone and my Skype phone will ring together. That's not really true, but I'll get back to that later on, Led by Brain. This got me thinking, is Skype reliable enough for me to cancel my Vonage phone account? You know, Skype being free, what concerns me, what happens if it malfunctions? I don't know what to do. I don't have a cell phone right now. One of the few in the D.C. area that doesn't.
Yeah.
The reason I downloaded Skype is I got an interview, and they want to have a video interview. I guess that's becoming the new norm. Now, I've got a second question. Any advice on how to make myself more appealing in the video, video thing? So when using, you know, when I'm using this Skype photo booth kind of deal on the iMac, I'm thinking, you know, I don't look that good. So what do you have? What suggestions do you have to make the video more appealing when I'm on this video call? Okay, let me get to both sides of this question. First of all, let's talk about Vonage. Vonage is a voice over IP system. It actually assigns a phone number to you. Somebody calls that phone number, and your home phone rings on Vonage. Skype actually, and so Vonage supports, you know, acts like a landline. Actually, it acts a lot like UMA. Now Skype is computer to computer. Now, you know, Skype supports video conferencing, but if it's a free account, you can only call another computer. Somebody can't call you from a landline. If you want to make Skype actually have landline functions, you have to buy Skype In, which means you've got to purchase an external phone number that costs around $100 a year. So Skype, if you're going to actually use it like you use Vonage, is not really free. Now, what I do, I use UMA, which I just said. I pay $225 once, and now I pay only about $20 a year for my, quote, landline, because I transferred my landline to UMA. Vonage costs you $29 to $39 a month.
Hmm.
So in 1 year, you're going to spend $300. So
wow.
Actually, Vonage, because they charge you this ongoing monthly fee, is a lot more expensive than UMA. So I'd suggest that you get UMA. Now let's talk about how to look good on a video call.
A sign that says free beer in the background?
No. Personal appearance. Here is the key. It's all about lighting. What usually happens is that if you look at a portrait photographer, they have two lights. They've got the main light that comes in. It comes in from a 45-degree angle, and it's usually a little bit higher. And then they have a weaker light called the fill light. So what you want to do is get a two-light system, and you might take a lamp on one side with a brighter bulb and a lamp on the other side, and adjust the position so that you've got good shadows on your face. That's key. It's all about lighting. Make certain that the background is clear. Now, the other thing I would do is I would sit back from your webcam so it just doesn't have your face.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's nothing worse than just a talking head, and you can't even see the shoulders. So you want to back far enough away so you get basically a shoulder shot, and they can sort of, it looks like a portrait and not just a head.
And I'd wear a bolo tie.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd wear something, you know,
professional.
Something very professional. Yeah, you want a very professional dress.
Not your I'm with stupid T-shirt.
No, I'd wear a very professional dress as though you were going for the interview, something that has good contrast,
mm-hmm.
you know, good color contrast,
sure.
just like you appear on a TV show. And with proper lighting, I think you'd look quite good.
Well,
most people don't do anything with the lighting, and they just look terrible.
Well, that goes a long way, because you're telling the potential employer that, hey, I'm interested in this job, really, enough so that I'm going to put some effort into this.
That's right. And so just spend some time, and then what you can do is you can adjust the lights, And now I don't recommend you don't need heavy makeup. You can basically look very nice as you are properly lit. So that's my question. Most people don't even think about this issue, how to make their video conference look better. That was actually a very good point. Okay, we got an email from Jim. This is your email, Jim.
Yes.
Jim from across the counter here.
Exactly.
How do you control your television using your iPad or iPhone? I'd love to dump my pile of remotes.
I would.
This would make life easier for all concerned. No more fighting over the remote.
And
thanks,
cheaper,
Jim.
Because the dog keeps eating the remotes.
It'd be much cheaper. Well, I tell you, I love to control my TV using my Wi-Fi controls. Now, I bought the Logitech Harmony Link.
Mm-hmm.
Logitech Harmony Link is about $100. Now, the Logitech Harmony Link lets you control all your home theater gear using the app on either the iOS or the Android. It's also iPad optimized and lets you view your TV listings with large colorful tiles. So the Harmony Link, it actually allows you, it's kind of a web-based setup when you set it up. So you have to tell the Harmony Link which devices you want to control. So you have to tell it what is your TV set, what kind of receiver do you have, what is your DVD player, what kind of cable box do you have. And once you put all that stuff in there, it knows the IR commands for it. So then I simply press a button on the application on my iPhone. I said, watch TV, and it just ships out all these IR commands to control all my devices automatically. Now, it has one now the Harmony Link, it's got an IR emitter in the it's a little oval thing. It's, that little box emits IR, and it sort of fills the room with IR, so if everything is within the direct sight, it'll control all your components. Now, I've got components in a little cabinet, so you can plug in two remote IR emitters in the back of the box.
I see.
So
that.
I hang these remote emitters down inside of the box, and I fill the inside of my cabinet with IR, and it just controls everything.
That is amazing.
It's only $100, and the features on the iPad are fantastic because I can scroll through, I can look at all of the different. It's very easy to select what you want to watch.
So,
you can set it up for HD only.
So you can set it up for if you have a Blu-ray box and you have Netflix or Amazon on something like that, you could control that too.
Yeah, see, you can get as many components as you want.
Wow.
And so what you do, you say, so I've got one button that says watch TV. I've got another button that says watch DVD, and it turns on the DVD, gets everything all adjusted for that.
That is amazing.
You have a lot of buttons. I mean, you can actually create a new icon, and you can have any configuration of your components that you want for any function that you want to do. So you don't actually have to know anything. And the beauty is now, like in our house, we got two iPhones and two iPads. That means we have four controllers. So there's always a controller around.
Sure.
And so the only downside is that if your battery goes dead on your iPhone, then you got to go get the iPad.
And
but you know,
by
but
the I, way, I, some of those iPhones and iPads were free because they were one.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. I've never bought an iPad. We won all the iPads.
That's amazing.
So that is the Harmony Logitech Harmony Link. It's only $100. I mean, it is very, very useful. I've been using it for a good long while.
Thank you
for
that information.
We got an email from John in Alexandria. Dear Tech Talk, are external hard drives worth the trouble? If an external hard drive can fail, should I bother with one? I'm conflicted because you've talked about your external hard drive, but now I know external hard drives can fail. Thanks, John in Alexandria. Well, that is true, John. Hard drives fail, or they can be corrupted.
Well, anything can fail, right?
Yeah, anything can fail. But actually, online backup systems can fail, too. They can be hacked. Your account could be stolen. You hear about cases where there actually is data loss. So anything can fail. So the key is redundancy. You need multiple copies of all your critical files. If there's one copy only, it's not backed up. So if you put your one copy on an external hard drive and delete it from your computer, it's not backed up. You still only have one copy. So you need multiple copies. Now, I like the rule of three. I have all my critical files in three places. I have it like on my laptop. I back up my laptop to Carbonite, so that's an online, off-site backup. And then I have my external hard drive that I back up critical files to. So I've got it three places, two at home and then one off-site. With that rule of three, there's really no problem. Now, I got a little 1 terabyte external hard drive. It's like USB. It's Toshiba. And if you look at the reliability statistics on Toshiba, they're the best.
Mm-hmm.
They had the best reliability statistics of all of the hard drive manufacturers. So I got a Toshiba 1 terabyte hard drive for $64. And it's powered by the USB port. I don't even have to, I just plug it into my computer. I got one terabyte. And it's, so I use that. I'm very, very happy with that $64 purchase. Cool. And so there you go. That was a good question. Redundancy is the key, and use the rule of three.
That is correct. You know, we need to keep the email, mailbag thing.
Oh, yes, that's right.
The hamster needs to keep walking on that wheel, right?
That's right. So we love your emails. Send the emails to Stratford, to TechTalk at Stratford.edu. TechTalk@Stratford.edu. They'll be forwarded to me. We'll handle them on the show, or sometimes I answer them directly.
Absolutely. You are listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, heard in the nation's capital on 1500 AM and 820 AM, and on the interwebs at TechTalkOnline.com and on FederalNewsRadio.com. We'll have more of Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to feature Cheryl Kara Sandberg. Cheryl Kara Sandberg is Chief Operating Officer at Facebook, and she's the force behind monetizing the site.
Uh-huh.
And really the key to their recent increase in stock valuation.
And they've been having their problems.
Oh, they have been. Cheryl Kara Sandberg was born August 28, 1969, in Washington, D.C.
Right here.
Yeah. She only stayed here 2 years, though. After when she was 2 years old, she moved to North Miami Beach with her family.
Gee, that's terrible.
I know. I thought we had somebody local, but now she left us, went to Miami Beach. She attended public schools there in Miami, and while she was in high school, she taught aerobics. In 1987, Sandberg enrolled at Harvard. She received a Bachelor of Arts in Economics in 1991 and was the number one economic student in her class.
Huh.
She was quite the academic success. While at Harvard, Larry Summers became her mentor and thesis advisor. Then Summers recruited her as his research assistant at the World Bank, where she worked for approximately 1 year on health projects in India. In 1993, she enrolled in Harvard Business School, and in 1995, she earned her MBA. After graduating from a business school, she worked as a management consultant at McKinsey & Company for about a year. Then in 1996, she was chief of staff to Secretary of the Treasury Larry Summers. So that little internship was a good thing for her. She
Pretty
met Larry
impressive.
Summers. Yeah, he was actually worked under under President Bill Clinton. She was there for 5 years as his chief of staff. She actually worked one of her big projects. This was when they had the economic meltdown in Asia, and she was helping in the loan forgiveness program for Indonesia and Asia during mm-hmm. that time period. Then in 2001, she joined Google as vice president for global online sales and operations. This is 2001, so this was, back there back there right in the beginning there.
She's in her 30s at this point.
Yeah, and she was responsible for online sales of Google advertising and publishing products. And, you know, Google's been wildly successful in that whole market. So in 2007, Mark Zuckerberg, co-founder and chief executive of Facebook, met Sandberg at a Christmas party. Now, you remember back in 2007, everybody said, you know, Mark, this Facebook thing, you're not making any money.
Mm-hmm.
So he met Sandberg, who was in charge of monetizing Google. He says, you know, I think you'd be a good COO for me. I kind of like this match. It's kind of a match made in heaven. So he really, really talked to her at that Christmas party. They met again January 2008 at the World Economics Forum in Davos, Switzerland. And he said, you know, I think you need to come to Facebook. We need to monetize just like Google. So in March of 2008, he announced that he had hired Sheryl Sandberg, and she was leaving Google to come to Facebook. She quickly began trying to figure out how to make Facebook profitable, because before she joined, Facebook was primarily, and these are the words of Mark Zuckerberg, interested in building a really cool site. Profits would follow someday, somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So he was in the cool site business, not in the profit business. Okay, so she came in with a bachelor's in economics and monetization. She says, okay, Mark, we got to make some changes here. So by late spring, Facebook's leadership agreed to actually advertise. This was late spring in 2008. Mm-hmm. They said, okay, I guess we better advertise, because we do have to make money at some point. By 2010, this was 2 years after she arrived, Facebook actually became profitable. Sandberg oversees business operations, including sales, marketing, business development, human resources, public policy, and communications. She's covering all the operational aspects of the business. In 2011, her compensation was $300,000 base salary, but she received $30 million in Facebook shares.
Good grief.
$30 million in Facebook shares. She also owns another $38 million in stock options and restricted stock units. In 2012, she became the eighth member and first female in Facebook's board of directors. Her net worth is now more than $1 billion.
Mm.
I don't have them in the notes here, but I was looking her up. She's now worth about $1.4 billion, and she was sort of came to my attention because she was one of the first female technical leaders to be worth more than $1 billion. So that's a nice piece of change for her. Sandberg's currently married to David Goldberg, who is CEO of SurveyMonkey.
Did we talk about SurveyMonkey at one point?
Yeah, we have. We talked about SurveyMonkey. Mm-hmm. Maybe I should feature David Goldberg, her husband, someday.
Sure, that'd be great.
That'd be a good idea. They have two children. In March 2013, Sheryl Sandberg published her first book, Lean In. Lean In.
Lean In.
Women, Work, and the Will to Lead. And so the Lean In, it's a book for professional women who want to achieve career goals, and for men who want to, this is her words, to create a more equitable society. You know, this is like her take on it. Now, Sandberg's book inspired the Lean In movement, which aims to help women achieve their professional and personal goals by leaning into their ambitions. So there you go, Sheryl Sandberg, who, you know, sort of in a circuitous route, ended up in the tech world, and she certainly did become very effective at managing the business side of Facebook.
And wildly rich.
And wildly rich, yes.
You're listening to a couple of wild guys talking about technology on Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and 820 AM. Hope you're paying attention to that profile, because if you were really paying attention and got the right information, you've got a chance to win a good prize here on Tech Talk Radio. 1500 AM, 820 AM, federalnewsradio.com, and techtalkonline.com. Be right back with a pop quiz.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business,
From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Yes, welcome back to not a radio show,
no,
but rather a classroom of the airwaves.
Right.
And, of course, if it's a classroom, there must be an assessment. If you get the correct answer to this pop quiz, which is our form of assessment, you'll win two tickets to fine dining to the Escoffier Dining Room at the Karam Dining Room, and you'll also receive an A-plus for this particular class period.
Uh-huh.
Earlier in the show, I was talking about Sheryl Sandberg, the chief operating officer of Facebook and the force behind monetizing the site. She had a circuitous career which led her to Facebook, and she met Mark Zuckerberg in a certain way. Exactly where was she when she met Mark Zuckerberg, and that led to ultimately her being selected as chief operating officer at Facebook.
Now, if you have the correct answer, what is the fabulous prize that you'll win?
You'll win two tickets to fine dining to the Escoffier Dining Room or the Karam Dining Room.
Now, in order to get from having the knowledge to winning the prize, you must call us. And
that
the number
is
if you're calling from west of Washington, D.C., it's 877-936-9333. If you're calling from east of North Miami Beach, it's 877-936-9333. And, of course, the wild card line for everybody else is 877-936-9333.
And if you're a trapper living in Siberia, you can reach us on Skype. Simply connect to Tech Talk Radio. Radio 1 on Skype, and that'll be forwarded directly to the radio studio free of charge.
But I bet people are just going to call on the phone.
Oh, it could be.
Yeah, okay.
It could be. Okay, well, this last week I've been flying the drone now. I've been flying it for 2 weeks now. It's on my third week. And first of all, I've broken 6 propellers on this drone.
Good
so
grief.
Now
You're
I
dangerous.
Have I have purchased propeller guards. I brought it in to show Jim that my propeller
yes.
guards. These are really training wheels for drone for drone pilots. So I decided after 6 propellers, and each propeller is $7.50, that I didn't want to break the bank on propellers, so
no.
I thought I better get a propeller guard. So I did that, and then I was flying it around, and I went out one night to look at the sunset out, and I was just I went up to 1,000 feet, and I was just flying around the neighborhood having fun. It was at dusk, and I was coming back to the house to land, and my neighbor's got a tree that must go up 100 feet, and I thought I was going to clear the tree. I mean, I was actually not, I wasn't really paying that much attention. I was kind of a cavalier drone pilot.
I'm glad you're not an airplane pilot.
And so I clipped the top of this tree, and one of the propellers, the tip of one of the propellers broke off. That was the 6th propeller that I broke. And the drone fell crashing into my neighbor's front yard. And the camera went to one place. The battery went another place. And so I walked over to my neighbor's house in the evening. It was dusk. And I was tiptoeing around in his front yard looking for my drone parts. And so I found the camera, I found the drone body, and I found the battery. And then I tiptoed back home. And I had really a bad evening sitting there with my broken drone.
Yeah, because now you can't fly it. I mean, is your neighbor okay? I mean,
my neighbor doesn't know.
He doesn't know.
I'm hoping he's not listening to the radio.
If he
show.
Did, would he? You guys on good terms?
Yeah, we're on good terms.
Okay.
We're on good terms. I didn't land on anybody's head. Didn't land on anybody's dog. Now my other neighbor, if I'd have landed in their front yard, their dog would have eaten the drone.
That's a problem.
So that would be a major problem. So, But then I was worried. I said, what am I going to do? I ordered this thing. It's made by DJI. I ordered it from Amazon. I don't even have a dealer. I mean, I said, well, maybe I could try to fix it myself. There's a broken wire.
I took
the top of the drone off. I was working.
Well, I keep forgetting you built your own speakers once, so you probably could fix it.
So naturally, I took the whole drone apart, and I found a couple of broken wires, and I soldered them back. Then I finally thought I fixed it all. I got the gimbal working. I got everything put together, but the camera wouldn't turn on. I thought, man, this is not good. And it turned out I was fortunate there was an authorized dealer in Riverside, Maryland, only 22 miles from my house.
Uh-huh.
Intelligent UAS. I'll give them a plug because these guys did a great job. Because I thought, I'm going to go there. They're going to charge me $600 for this camera. They're going to give me some, you know, story, and it's going to be really expensive. I dropped it off on Monday. Tuesday morning, they said, your drone's ready to go. They said it took an hour and a half to fix it. We replaced we had put in some extra wires. And he said it's only $50 an hour labor plus the wires. I paid him $93 and had my drone back the next day.
Amazing.
I mean, that was really unbelievably good. I'm really happy that I got my drone back, thanks to Intelligent UAS in Riverside, Maryland. They also sell these drones, by the way.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. Well, it is time. Let me play our little game here. Let us go to line one. And this is MJ calling from Columbia, Maryland. MJ, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good, thank you. Dr. Schertz got to ask a question.
Yes, earlier in the show I talked about Steve Gibson, of course, president of Gibson Research. What is the one product that Gibson Research sells that they charge for?
The one product is Spinrite.
That is correct. Correct. You win two tickets to Fine Dining, the Scafia Dining Room, or the Karim Dining Room.
Thank you very much, MJ. Appreciate you listening, and thanks for calling. Hang on a second. Andrew Mitchell, who is our adjunct professor for prize distribution and crowd control, will now take your call and give you the prize. So, Doc, do we want to – so we took this thing for a flight last week.
I think we need to have a test flight right on the air now.
Okay, here's what it sounded like.
Doc, what is it that you have here?
I have my Phantom 2 Vision quadcopter.
All right.
It's got a 14-megapixel camera on it. And I'm going to take and launch this thing. I've actually got the video connected to my iPhone, so I can see what that sees. I will take this up to a few hundred feet and look around, take a picture of the WTOP studios from a couple hundred feet. Maybe we'll go above the construction site next door.
Okay, it's about 19 degrees, and the winds are light here, so let's see what happens.
I have to wait for it to get lock onto GPS. I don't have enough satellites yet. I've only got 3 satellites. It has to get 5 to 6 satellites before it's stable. If I launch it before I have GPS, it won't know where to come back.
This could be a problem.
Yeah.
This would be a $1,200 mistake.
That's right. So this has a GPS. It's got a gyroscope. It's got an altimeter in it. It's got a compass. That's all the tools that it uses to move around. If I lose connection, it will automatically come back home and land at the same place it took off within the accuracy of GPS. Could be this WTOP building could be blocking our view of the satellite. So let's go down here closer to the police station.
Let's walk down toward the police station because this could add an extra element of disaster to what we're about to do.
It could be possible that I could land it on the roof of the police station over there.
That would really be great if we both got arrested like at 8:59 a.m.
I'll turn on the motor. I could take it up a little. I'll just let it sit here for a while. See, it's drifting because it doesn't have GPS locked yet.
I see that. Everybody watch your face. Because he's got this thing. Oh, that's better, yeah.
I'd cut anybody's hair. So it's... Oh, I've got green now.
Okay, good. Here we go.
Okay, here we go. Let's take it on off. So the iPhone, you can see here, you've got the picture here.
Good grief, we can see.
Here's the top of the WTOP building here. Let me go down here. I'll just get a shot here.
We're all looking at your iPhone. Meanwhile, we have this unmanned spaceship about 100 feet in the air.
So now the thing is actually at it's only 130 feet up.
Only 130 feet off the ground. That's great.
Oh, just shoot it on up a bit more.
Yeah, you do that.
I'm up to about 300 feet now. let's go up to maybe 400 feet. And okay, let's take a movie of the horizon here.
Yeah, okay. Meanwhile, there's traffic.
There's traffic here. That's all right. Now you can see here, at the I'm looking at the horizon from about 100 feet. So let's just start the movie. We're still up there.
Oh,
and it's,
yeah, we are.
It's only 405 feet.
Only
I mean,
405 feet.
Now, I've taken it up to around 1,000 feet.
I wonder if you have anybody's attention over at the O Naval Observatory or...
This is. Let's take a picture of the construction site while we're at it. Now, I think I better bring it down.
I think you better bring it down because we have to go do a radio show.
Okay, so I'm dropping it down. I'll try to be careful that we don't cut anybody's hair. How many feet am I at now?
I don't know. You're at the controls. You figure this out.
Okay, here we go. We're dropping down.
It's getting bigger.
Here we go.
Here it comes.
I'm going to try not to hit that UPS box.
That'd be a great thing because I'm standing right next to the UPS box.
Now, here we go. We're coming down. Yeah, do you mind? I think I need to come a little bit closer to us, don't you think?
I think that's a great idea.
You think so?
No, I don't.
Well, there you have it. There you go.
And that's, we successfully landed. We actually didn't even crash that time.
Didn't crash anything, didn't break anything,
no,
there were no arrests.
But the interesting is, you know, we were sort of flying over right in front of the windows here at the WTOP building, sort of like we were looking in, and there were these three guys doing a podcast on trends in journalism, and they look out, and there's this drone looking at them through the window.
So they stopped doing what they were doing and came outside to see what we were doing.
And their first question was, who are you with?
Exactly right. KGB comrade.
That's right. Checking on this podcast going on there. So they ended up featuring that on their podcast. And I don't even know where it's played, but we're featured somewhere.
I don't have their website in front of us, but we'll get that to you so you can hear them talk about it. This is Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. Stand by. More coming up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And this last week, I've been playing around with Chromecast.
Mm-hmm.
This is by Google.
Toys.
Yeah, it was fun. It was it's a device for playing things on your television set and sharing them with either your mobile device or with your desktop. And it's a very nice unit. I got the thing Thursday, and I tell you, I didn't go to bed till 2 a.m. You know, this was a because it took me a little bit of time to get it set up because you have to get the Wi-Fi router configured right.
Mm-hmm.
So Chromecast, it's a digital media player developed by Google. Now, it's actually about it's almost 3 inches long, 2.83 inches long, and it's what they call an HDMI dongle. It just sort of slips into the HDMI port on the back of your television. Now, HDMI, of course, is digital video combined with digital audio all in one connector, HDMI. And so your television set is going to have an HDMI port on the back. You plug it in, and this will then connect your television set to the web. Now, as soon as you connect your Chromecast dongle on, you have to configure it because, of course, it cannot connect to your Wi-Fi system until you give it the password. So you got to configure it. So it turns out they have an application, a Chromecast application that you can download to either your iPhone or your Android device or to your desktop, and that device will connect to the Chromecast device. Now, when the Chromecast device is not on your Wi-Fi network, it becomes its own little Wi-Fi hotspot. So what you want to do is you have to go to your Wi-Fi signal where you attach the Wi-Fi network, and you'll see this. Well, you get about 20 feet away, within 20 feet of your Chromecast dongle, and you'll see this little extra Wi-Fi signal called Chromecast with some number. Click on that and attach to the Chromecast dongle. At that point, that's just like plugging into the Chromecast dongle, and you can configure it. So once you attach to the Wi-Fi the Chromecast dongle, that application then will ask you to configure the dongle, and you give it the name of the Wi-Fi network you want it to use. You give it the password to the Wi-Fi network, and then you set your time zone, and then click configure, and then it configures it. And then once it locks onto your Wi-Fi network, this other Chromecast Wi-Fi network just turns off. It's no longer there, and it's configured. So then it's sitting there waiting to talk to somebody. So what you have to do then is if you say have a desktop, you use it. You have to have the Chrome browser on your desktop. It could either be a Mac or it could be a Windows. So you download the Chrome browser, and there's an extension called Chromecast extension for the Chrome browser. So you download the Chromecast extension. And what that does, it puts a little icon in the upper right-hand corner. It's like a rectangle with kind of a Wi-Fi symbol right on top of it. So you click on that Chromecast, and it says, do you want to cast this tab? And it will look at the name of all of the Chromecasts that you have in your – you could have a Chromecast on every TV in the house. So it might detect five Chromecasts. But in my case, it only detected one Chromecast. Which I named it Rick's Chromecast.
Of course.
So because, it's mine.
It's yours.
Yeah. And so then I attached it to Rick's Chromecast, and then immediately what was in that tab on my Chrome browser showed up on the TV set. So then what I did, I decided, okay, I'm going to go to Netflix. I've got a Netflix account, which is I really enjoy Netflix.
Sure.
I finally got a Netflix. $7.99 a month.
I finally
got it. You know, after years of not getting it, I finally did get it. It's very nice. So I logged into my Netflix account using that tab on my Chrome browser, and then the Netflix movie shows up on the TV. But the interesting thing, the way the software works, the Netflix stream doesn't go to my browser and then to the TV. It goes directly to the TV. So then I could actually start doing other things with my computer, and I can control the movie from that tab. But you don't see the movie on the browser; you see it on the TV. And so you could actually and they call it casting. So you're casting that tab to the particular TV. So that's very nice. Now, then I went to the iPhone. So Google, as you'd expect, has made this thing really work well with the Chrome device. I can turn the casting on, turn the casting off. I can control it very neatly. It never hangs up. It's also got great reviews when you're doing with an Android device. Now, you might expect they might not make it work quite as well with the Apple devices.
Right.
So they do have a Chromecast app, which I downloaded to my iPhone, and I basically reset my Chromecast, and I just configured it using my iPhone to see if I could do it. But in the case of the iPhone, the Chrome browser doesn't have this extension for Chromecast, so that you have to use applications that are Chromecast ready. So Netflix, the latest version of Netflix is Chromecast ready, and the latest version of YouTube applications is Chromecast ready. So you download YouTube and Netflix, and in those applications you see the Chromecast icon, the little rectangle with the circular lines there, which indicate Wi-Fi. You click on that, and it sends the YouTube or the Netflix to the TV, and it works perfectly when you do that. The problem is you can't turn it off. There's no way to stop casting to the system. Like I tried to stop casting it, so finally I turned off the movie, And then I turned off my iPhone, and it'll just keep casting there. And so so the only way I could get it to stop casting from my iPhone was to basically go to my laptop and cast from there. So it's a little quirky the way it works with the iPhone. I really think they're probably going to do one update, and it's going to work really nice.
Cool.
But this is a great feature. I really love this Chromecast. Very innovative technology, and it's a way that you can make any TV and, you know, send a movie to any TV.
Excellent.
And it's probably going to eliminate, people could probably just cancel all of this video content that they get from Comcast or Verizon and just use Netflix at $7.99 a month.
Mm-hmm. Based on time, let's just keep it here.
Okay. So let's go here. More Americans are reading e-books.
Mm-hmm.
Now, see, at Stratford, we've probably got 70% of our classes on e-books. Not all of my classes have e-books, but most of them do, and so we're trying to transition everything to e-books. But more and more Americans are reading e-books. Pew Internet and American Life Project surveyed that. 28% of all U.S. adults have read an e-book in the past year, up from 23%. 3 in 4 Americans read a book in any format over the past year. 3 in 4 have read some book, but actually only 28% of them read an e-book. 4%, that said, only about 4% of Americans only read e-books.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I actually read both e-books as well as, I like a real book, but I read a lot of e-books. It turns out the younger you are and the wealthier you are, the more likely it is that you've got an e-book. I'd be younger because people are just used to being online. 37% of those between 18 and 29 have read an e-book, compared to only 12% of those above 65 have read an e-book. Kindle is the most popular device, really, for all the reasons I gave earlier. E-books also skew wealthier. 46% of those who have read e-books make more than $75,000 a year. That's because you got to buy a device to read it, like a Kindle. So,
mm-hmm.
So that skews wealthier. E-book reading device ownership also skews toward the younger and wealthier, as you'd expect. Children are reading more and more e-books, and we're expecting a transition because of that, because the kids are using it. 2/3 of the children in age 2 to 13 have read an e-book. 2/3 of them.
Wow.
And that's compared to only 54% of them a year ago. So we're seeing a major shift, a major trend in the movement from conventional books to e-books. I tell you, I grew up with regular books. I just love holding a book and reading it. But what I do, I've downloaded about 12 books that are on my reading list to my iPad. And when I go on this trip to India, I'm going to read e-books on the airplane.
Mm-hmm.
I'll read e-books when I'm traveling. And if I get a book that I really love, I'll buy the paper copy so I can have it right in my hands,
huh?
And I can hold it. I like to give books to people.
Sure.
So when I get a book I like, I'll get maybe 10 copies. I'll just give them away to people. And giving an actual book is much more satisfying than actually sending them an e-book.
Exactly.
I'll tell you, the time just flew by so quickly. Now listen, check out Stratford University programs by going to stratford.edu and let them know that you heard about them on Tech Talk. We also love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu, and then we'll cover your email on the air, or maybe we'll answer it directly. And you can always go to iTunes and check out the Tech Talk podcast.
You can also learn more about us by going to techtalkonline.com. There you can see written outlines of all of our previous shows, and you can hear all of those shows as well. Please also visit federalnewsradio.com. That's all we have time for this week. Please tune in again next week for Tech Talk Radio here on Federal News Radio, 1500 and 820 AM.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFMHD2 Manassas, WTLPFMHD2 Braddock Heights Frederick, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics. Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Federal News Radio's DoD Wednesday. At 3, DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. At 4, in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a smart discussion on the issues and challenges of the defense community. Plus daily DoD updates, mornings and afternoons, Monday through Friday. DoD Wednesday on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
This paid commercial may not